So thank you so much. Thank you, David, for this introduction and especially the circumstances which you have made possible at the occasion of this visit. No, but let me really thank you, first of all, for being here. The Royal Society has an enormous reputation, an enormous flair, and the glory which is attached to this is just incredible. And I would like to really thank the host here also for giving us a short glimpse into the Principia Mathematica, Isaac Newton, and some other pieces, which is a childhood dream, to be very honest. I've studied about these books, and seeing them in front of you is just an incredible pleasure and honor, and I really would like to thank you. But also thank you, David, for arranging it and making it possible, and I'm just grateful to be here in the UK. What I have done is put a few slides together, but before I go into them, maybe a few words on my side on the UK, space, and ESA, and how all this fits together, and what's the purpose of my talk and my message to you. My message to you is that ESA is here for the UK. The UK is a very strong member state of ESA, a very excellent member state with a lot of capabilities and a lot of capabilities on the science side, on the engineering side, on the project management side. And we need this excellence in ESA, and we need a very strong member state, the UK, in ESA. Likewise, I hope that you also need ESA on your side to implement your national priorities, your national strategies. I understand the space strategy is being published very soon. I hope it is very much in line what we can offer. And I'm at your disposal here as ESA Director General to make sure that your national priorities can be realized through us, because we are, of course, the space agency for Europe with all the connections to our member states, but also we are a gateway to the world, because ESA certainly is probably the space agency with most of interactions and projects and programs with other countries and nations, not only NASA and the US, but also all other countries. We are probably unique in this network and cooperations we have with Russia, with China, with India, with Japan, and with all the other space agencies as well. So please use ESA also as the UK's gateway into the world. Having said that, if you allow me, I go through a couple of slides just to give you a bit of a flavor of what the priorities are on ESA, and especially how they relate to the UK. This one shows the breadth of the activities within ESA. You see several pictures here. And what it does say is that ESA is active in all domains of space. And that's quite unusual, because many space agencies are not active in all domains. But we are, and we do. And not going into detail of these individual boxes and images, but we are working in space science, in space exploration, human and robotic exploration, in the applications, navigation, Earth observation, telecommunications, safety and security, and also the operations and enabling parts of space, which are launches, obviously, but also operations and technology developments. And this is really something that is quite unique and is quite useful for the realization of priorities of member states. Next slide seems not to work. Yep. Yes, yeah. Yep. What you see here is the ESA budget. Of course, always important to talk about money. We have a budget overall of about 6.5 billion. 24% of it is coming from the Commission, and the other 76% from the ESA member states. And within that, within the ESA member states, a bit more than 9%, 9.2% comes from the UK. UK is a very strong partner, a very solid partner, and a very important partner in our budget contributions. Maybe just one word on how we collect the money for those that are not so familiar with the ESA mechanisms. We are having ministerial conferences about every 3 years. And at these ministerial conferences, we are proposing programs to the member states, which we negotiate with the member states for more than a year and a half, roughly, to really make sure that the interests of the member states are well reflected and well taken on board before we define a program and put it on the table for subscription. And then comes the moment of subscription at the ministerial conference, where then the countries put their money into the programs and sign up their portion of a global program, which of course is usually involving or inviting many member states to participate. And this is a mechanism which works pretty well. ESA, some people would say ESA is a perfect machinery to collect money, but also give it back to industry, to the countries. And we have a principle of spending almost all the money which we get back again in the member states. 15% is used for running facilities, buildings, salaries, and so on. But the other 85% go back to industry, go back to institutions. That means the majority of the money goes back to the countries to build up space programs and space activities across Europe in cooperation and participation with other countries and other industries. And this is showing the situation of the UK. The UK is the fourth largest ESA contributor in financial terms. The UK has subscribed the last ministerial conference about 1.7 billion euros, which was a very strong subscription. And I really would like to use this opportunity to thank the UK government for this trust they have put into ESA and subscribed to the various programs. You see here on the bottom, some of the bars are in different heights. That means the contributions or domains where the UK has participated or is participating. Earth observation is the highest one, telecom and integrated applications, human robotic exploration. So you are participating in almost all programs, but not in all, for example, not in launches, but I would say in most of the other programs, you are very strongly participating. And this, of course, is your priorities. That means the UK chooses what is in line with its national priority and then signs up to these ESA programs, because these ESA programs are optional to a large extent, optional meaning that you choose where you participate with how much or where you do not participate. And that is the flexibility of ESA, which is a very strong one and makes us a very flexible agency, which is steered by the member states, and your interests are very well and very easily reflected. UK success and future growth paths, and put a few slides together more as an indication of where the UK is strong and where future opportunities lie. And let me just go through some of these examples. One is, you see on the left-hand side, Solar Orbiter and Plato. These are two missions. Solar Orbiter was launched last year with a very strong UK participation and leadership. And there are many instruments on board. It's one of the most complex satellites exploring, in this case, the sun itself. It's flying as close to the sun as no other spacecraft has done before to understand the dynamics and the various elements of the sun as our obviously central part of the solar system. Underneath you see Plato, which is launched in 26, which is looking at habitable planets in our universe, planets that have similar conditions as we have on planet Earth. We call it the Goldilocks zone, where you have certain temperature, radiation, illumination ranges that are favorable to life, at least as we would expect it in other solar systems. And this satellite will explore the areas, the domains where this situation occurs. On the right-hand side, you see Lunar Pathfinder. And that actually is a very interesting mission where the UK is clearly leading SSTL. And very happy to sit next to Martin Sweeting, with whom I'm signing an agreement in a couple of minutes after this meeting, where ESA and an industry, in this case SSTL, is working together in a very different way, where we are having a real partnership where the proposal comes from industry. We buy a service, but we also enable, through the addition of other partners in Europe and particularly NASA, providing the launch of the Lunar Pathfinder, to have a program that is much bigger than the investment which was made. If I express it in money terms, it's about a fivefold return or leverage, which is made possible through this investment of the UK in order to make this mission possible. It's a Lunar Pathfinder, which means that we will, for the first time, put telecommunication navigation capabilities on the moon, with the idea and as a precursor of future systems that will have telecommunication capabilities, navigation capabilities around the moon as the next frontier, which is being explored. Also offering it as an opportunity for cooperation with NASA or other partners. ExoMars, you see here the Rosalind Franklin rover. The name already says that there's a very strong UK leadership. Will be launched next year. It's a joint project between Roscosmos, Russians, and ESA. This is quite a challenge, because this rover will be the most comprehensive, complex rover roving on the Mars surface, with a number of instruments on board, among them a drill that goes 1.7 meters into the surface, takes a probe on Mars off the surface, does the analysis at the Mars, in the laboratory of the Mars rover, and of course provides the information back to Earth to understand what happens under the surface of Mars. Next slide shows examples of astronauts where ESA is very active. You see here Tim Peake, and I don't need to explain who Tim Peake is here in the UK, a big hero, but also a big hero in Europe across the various countries, because astronauts have such an ambassadorship and a role to play, and they're really incredibly, incredibly powerful in conveying a message. We are having at the moment Thomas Pesquet in orbit. We are getting Matthias Maurer into orbit in November, to be followed by Samantha Cristoforetti. But Tim Peake is part of this same astronaut corps. And I have to say, this is really something that is extremely important. On one side, of course, to do experiments on the space station, and there are many of them. There are hundreds of experiments each astronaut is performing during his or her stay on the space station. On the other side, of course, also the ambassadorship which these astronauts are having in a country for the usefulness of space for society. All of them, the ones when they come back and I ask them what is the most impressive thing you have seen, all of them say it is incredible how beautiful our planet is, but also how fragile our planet is. And none of them understands the problems which we are creating on Earth artificially through fights, ethnic, religious, whatever conflicts we have on this planet. They say it's impossible to understand why people are doing this while we are so isolated in the universe, this blue marble, literally, and we have to preserve it and make sure that our future of mankind is, and humankind is preserved. On the right-hand side, you see a picture on the big number, 22,500. This is the number of applications received at the last astronaut call this year, where we have invited a new generation of potential astronaut candidates to apply for astronaut posts. Maybe in comparison, we had the last call in 2008, and the selection was done in 2009. We had about 8,000 responses in the call 2008. Now we're at 22,500, so you see a big increase, which for me, as Director General, is also showing how popular space is among the young people. They want to become an astronaut. They want to work in space. Very satisfying, and this is something very important. We also, for the first time, have included a call for para-astronauts. That means astronauts with a physical handicap, which we would like to invite, and making sure that we are opening up space for everyone. This is part of the selection, of course, and we will have to study whether any adjustments need to be made in the space station or in the capsule in order to cater for this handicap. But certainly, this is something we would like to study. We have yet to go through the applications and see what this means. But just to say that this is something that is certainly very interesting. The next slide shows ESA Agenda 2025. And just one word on what it means and what is behind. When I was nominated DG of ESA, which happened in December last year, I immediately started thinking and writing, what do I propose as the strategy and the vision for ESA during my mandate as Director General of ESA? On the 1st of March was my first working day as DG of ESA, and I put a document on the table, which I elaborated myself with the help of a few, with a small group, called Agenda 25, to outline the priorities for the next years. But the starting point was, if we want to look into space, of course you have to look long-term, because space developments are not done from one year to the next. You need a longer term vision to see what happens, or what is the world looking like in the 30s, 2035, for example, and where do you want ESA or Europe to be using space as a tool in order to get there? And what are the bigger ambition? And then, of course, what are the immediate steps necessary in order to get there? And you see them on the right-hand side, some of these bullets which are identified as priorities in order to make sure that we're meeting the challenges of space in Europe. But this also means that we need to put ourselves in context. And Europe, if you open the news papers, if you look on TV or on the internet, you see a lot of news about space. I have to say today, unfortunately, many of these news are coming from the US, coming from China, or from other parts, and not always from Europe. And that, of course, is something that bothers me as the CEO of ESA enormously, because I want ESA and Europe to be also making good news, of course, and making news in the positive sense. But if I read these news in the US or in China, there's a reason. And the reason is that space in these countries is enormously fast developing and is really propelled into space, literally, because both on the private side and on the government side, huge investments are made to build up space programs. I don't need to recall Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, the two richest people putting private money or their money into space, but also many Silicon Valley companies, but also in China, and this is sometimes underestimated, China is building up a space capability, which is at the same level as the one in Europe or as the one in the US, with capabilities actually even going beyond the ones of Europe. And this is quite amazing because Xi Jinping, president of China, has declared that China wants to be a superpower and they're using space as one element to get there. And this is done. This is what's happening. And that's why I think you should compare Europe with these other nations in order to see what and how space can be used. And it doesn't always mean that the frontier of exploring Mars and beyond is the only thing that we do. Space is used in many, many sectors for daily life, Earth observation, telecommunication, weather forecasts, navigation, and many other aspects where you depend on space. If you don't have it, you would simply not be able to live the life which we have today. Don't want to go into details, but space is an integral part of daily life of every single person on, certainly in the UK and many parts of the world. And some of these priorities are outlined here. Commercialization was one of them. And I have been inspired about the attitude and the way how the UK goes about business in space, but also in other parts. The UK is very business-minded, business-oriented, and that's something I picked up also in the Agenda 25, which of course is also triggered and mirrored some of the activities that happen outside. But commercialization of space is happening, and Europe should be a very important element in participating in this. This needs speed, that means being faster, more responsive and dynamic. It needs access to money, capital. Again, that's something that makes it happen. And talent, obviously, with people with brilliant ideas, driven with by their ideas and full of energy in order to realize their ideas. And then on the right-hand side, you see a number of actions. I'm not going into them, but just to say that we have laid out an implementation plan with actions, 60 altogether, which are linked to Agenda 2025, which we are implementing over the next couple of months and years. Some examples where the UK is very strong, and this is, for example, telecommunication. This is a satellite, which is probably very familiar to you, with a NEO platform, which is developed by Airbus Defence and Space, and we have Elodie, the head of EXAT, and my director for telecommunications and integrated applications here in charge of these domains. Just to say that here, the UK has developed a leadership in this domain, and this is a very commercially oriented application of space or use of space technology for the purpose of people, because telecommunications obviously serves many domains. Climate change, another example where the UK is having a priority nationally. I don't need to explain the importance of it. COP26 taking place this year in Glasgow. Again, space can provide enormous amounts of data, information to understand climate change, but also make sure that we are responding well with our means and making best use of the assets in space for the purpose of climate change and at the end, really making our life as humankind possible on this planet. Next slide shows one example, and if I click once more, this is an example using Earth observation data. Can we maybe click once more? Yes. You see here flooding, which happened just a couple of weeks ago in Europe. You see on the right-hand side the picture on the ground, on the left-hand side, a satellite image from Sentinel-1, one of the Copernicus Sentinels, a radar satellite, which allows to look through the clouds and therefore take images whenever the satellite flies over, especially important in the case of flooding, where you'd normally have bad weather and cloud cover. And you see, of course, you can enlarge these images, but you see here the areas which are flooded. And this is information that is immediately available in case of crisis. What I want to do, of course, is that this is being used in a much more operational way, that in case of a crisis, in case of a disaster, we have a rapid response system with satellites on one side, with a telecommunications network on the other side, with computation done partially in space in order to serve people, the fire brigades in case of forest fires, the civil protection agency in case of floods or other people who need this information very quickly. But this, of course, is a larger ambition which is in the making. Drought, another example where, of course, satellite images show very clearly the situation, the difference between 1 year and the other year. You see here 2018 as compared to the previous image, which was more green, which is a normal year. This is 28th of June 18, and this one 25th of July 2018. So within 1 month, the drought has caused this vegetation to really turn brown, meaning that water was evaporating and therefore missing for vegetation, with all the impacts it has on agriculture and many other aspects. UK is also strong on quite a few domains of Earth observation. I used to be the director of Earth observation before becoming DG of ESA, and I know these programs extremely well, and also the excellence which we have in the UK. TRUTHS is one program which was developed and proposed by the UK, is now an ESA program with other partners, and it will be a pioneer program to use these satellites for climate change, but also as a reference satellite to other satellites to cross-calibrate their sensors on this TRUTHS mission. Therefore, the UK asset, or the UK initiated asset, being a leader and a reference satellite to others. On the right-hand side, AELOS, one of the most exciting Earth Explorer missions ever. Impossible technology. We have been working long and hard to make it possible, with quite some delays, I should say. And sometimes when we had the launch of this satellite in 2017, some journalist asked me, why do you still go through this program and having so many years of delays? And my answer was, I'm actually very proud that we have still gone through it and not given up, because there have been people who said this is impossible to solve from a technology point of view. Our engineers with industry in the UK and other countries have gone through hard times, have not given up, have really solved problems. I could go into details, which I'm not doing, to solve individual steps of the, along this way, and made it possible. This has a UV laser on board, the only one in space. I can tell you that NASA has tried twice to fly this mission, have failed twice. We are the only one still, this is launched 2017, which has this technology to measure with this laser wind speed and direction in cloud-free atmosphere. And that's quite an achievement. And the UK can be very proud to have been leading this satellite program, of course, with many other partners in Europe. Next slide. Somehow this doesn't work. Can we get the next slide, please? Yes, sorry, previous one. So this was going faster. This is one of the priorities in Agenda 25, underlining the domains of safety and security, safety in space, that means space debris, safety in space to protect our own assets. As I mentioned before, satellites are an essential, integral part of our society, and we need to protect them. That means we need to know where is the space debris. In case of possible collisions, we need to fly maneuvers to avoid them. And this is an activity where we need to strengthen our capabilities in Europe. Today, we are not yet very strong in Europe, I have to say. But this is a domain I want to strengthen in the next couple of years. Again, the UK has a very strong capability here, and I would certainly rely on much of the expertise there. On the right-hand side, security from space, that means using our space assets for security purposes. Certainly, this is something that may touch a bit on the security part, which some people would call defense. I'm not using this terminology very much on purpose, but the security domain is very wide and very important and very a very essential one, where we as ESA, despite the notion of being an agency for which is doing space research for peaceful purposes can have a long way to go in order to satisfy a variety of user communities. And this is something, again, which we're building up in one-to-one dialogues with member states, see what are their interests, which is complementary, obviously, to national activities which are happening in some member states. Another example is space weather. You see here in the sun and the elements or the solar wind which comes out, and these bursts that come out from the sun are actually hitting our power grids and our infrastructure, and they can cause huge damages. One single event can cause economic damages in Europe of in the order of 15 billion euros if it is a strong one and disrupts power grids and communication lines. Thank God we don't have so many of those, but they do happen. And we're building a satellite to make sure that we know early in this process when this happens in order to take possible precautions of the infrastructure on ground. Next slide. Yes, this shows it's a priority of the Agenda 25, which says that there are individual program priorities which need their attention. And if I go to the next slide, that shows one of them, which is launches. Launches, of course, is essential to transport our satellites into space. This is an essential necessity in order to do that. You see here Ariane 6 and Vega C, which are the launches which will have their maiden flight next year. Also, Space Rider is visible here. Essential, of course, to have independent access to space, which is a priority also of ESA and its member states. Very important, and this is well known in the UK, talking of space flight is Sabre air breathing engines. And this is something also with David, sometimes we discuss as a top priority where ESA actually is investing significant amounts of funding also to support this type of technology, which is not only for space, but also for air traffic. And the potential here is enormous and quite an important aspect, but also micro launchers. That means small launches for smaller satellites, where we have different programs which we develop across Europe. Next one, please. This is a domain where we work closely with technologies like quantum technology in different domains, quantum communication, quantum computation, but also quantum gravimetry, which is on the bottom left, a completely new domain. It is something that has been flying on an aircraft, but over Iceland, we have got first measurements, not yet in space, and there will be huge challenges getting this technology in space. But if it works and when it works, this will allow an order of, not two orders of magnitude, increase of mass balance or mass detection measurements from space. And this will be going down to granularity, which is enormously important for many domains, from climate to agriculture to hydrology, water management, oceans, many aspects that will benefit from this. We are at the moment studying such a concept. I hope that we can fly a Pathfinder in this decade, and this would really open completely new doors and new domains. Another domain where we are engaging ourselves significantly is quantum computing or artificial intelligence and high-performance computing. And this is something, obviously, because we have huge volumes of data, but also our data needs are driving, to a certain extent, these technologies. And then maybe one small example on the top left here, which says FISAT. FISAT is a small experiment where we actually took a huge risk. And I said to my people, do not feel bad if you fail, because that's, I know it's unusual for ESA and it may sound a bit contradictory, but in this case, it is a technology where we bought a commercial AI chip, artificial intelligence, and put it into space to do machine learning computations in space instead of on the ground, which we usually do. This is the first satellite which flies such a chip in space, in this case, distinguishing cloud-free from clouded areas, so that you can reduce data rates significantly in space already and do calculations there. Of course, this principle, it works. The experiment was positive, but you can apply it also to ship detection, agricultural detection, flood detection, fire detection, whatever the chip is trained for, and do in the future computations in space and then get information tailored down to the surface. And you can imagine what potential there is. And I know as some commercial companies have picked up this invention and they're using it now more operationally in their systems. Next one. Yeah, this is a slide that shows a bit the ambition of the Agenda 25 that I would like to raise this debate of the importance of space for society and for people to the levels of heads of state and government. This is something I think is necessary because it is such an important domain economically, strategically, politically, that it touches so many domains of society and therefore is necessary that we raise the discussion to a higher level. Of course, this is unusual, and we have not done it yet in Europe. We did it for the creation of ESA 50 years ago, but I think it is time to again revisit the role of space for Europe, for society. And I would like to do this on this through the case of flagship activities, where we define major activities where space is used for the benefit of citizens. Climate change, rapid response, protection of our assets are some of these examples where I think this is done. And here, the work of David and the expert group, which was mentioned before, is essential in helping us shape these demands and shaping these messages. And this is really the end of my presentation, just to say that shaping the future of Europe in space and the UK being a very, very important member of ESA and a member of Europe in space, I really look forward to doing this together. I need the UK, and the UK can offer a lot to us, but also ESA can offer a lot to the UK, and I look forward to the discussion. And thank you once more for the opportunity to present to you. Thank you very much.